Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokesman.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, part-time entertainment hostess.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, that show that famously advocates seeking our quality cinema wherever you can find it. More and more, that means looking online, where a gaggle of streaming services regularly serve up a vast range of programming. The three of us this week will be discussing a pair of quality productions, the first being a four-part Netflix limited miniseries out of England titled Adolescence. The second is the latest entertainment from Steven Soderbergh titled Black Bag, which is based on an original screenplay by David Koepp and yet could easily work as an off-Broadway stage play. Let's begin by heading into a world that not all of us enjoyed, that of middle school. Remember those years, those that followed grade school and were a preview of what was coming in high school? That's the world that a 13-year-old English boy named Jamie Miller, played by Owen Cooper, is experiencing. It's also one he is suddenly and violently pulled from early one morning and accused of, well, murder. Created and co-written by the veteran British actor Stephen Graham and the producer Jack Thorne, and directed by Philip Barantini, the 4-hour-long episodes revolve around what happens following Jamie's arrest. We meet his parents, Eddie, played by Graham, and Manda, played by Christine Trimarco, and eventually his sister Lisa, played by Amelie Pays. But we first meet the arresting police officer, D.I. Bascom, played by Ashley Walters, whose son, played by Amari Backus, is an upperclassman in Jamie's school. And we become acquainted, too, with various others, from one of Jamie's angry classmates, Fatima Bojang, to a psychologist, played by Erin Doherty, who has an intense, frightening encounter with the now-incarcerated Jamie. The acting is, as you would expect, superb across the board, even from first-timer Cooper. But what's most compelling, aside from the subject matter, is the immersive technique of telling each episode in a real-time single take. The title feels a little misleading because what is conveyed is far more than a mere growing pains catalog of complaints. Then again, as we know, sociopathy these days definitely can be exacerbated by social media and the many trolls who lurk there.
I really think talking about adolescence, we kind of needed to divide it into three parts. One, as you mentioned, the performances. Two, the way it was filmed. And third, the subject matter. Because I think there's a lot to talk about with each of these. I mean, I was so looking forward to Adolescence that I actually convinced Dan to watch it while we were on vacation, which rarely ever happens. We rarely turn on the TV when we're on vacation. But so the first, the performances are just stellar.
What you would expect from British actors.
Right. So Stephen Graham, for example, you've seen him in a variety of things, even if you're not going to recognize him. He plays the dad. He also was behind the production in terms of writing it and so forth. And he's this like buff kind of gruff guy who's a plumber and, you know, your basic sort of down to earth person, but with a history, we discover. And so his performance, I thought, was it changes throughout because he doesn't really know what's going on with the story that I'll get into in a moment in a little bit more detail. And then Owen Cooper, who just sent in a tape. He'd had like a couple of acting classes and he is truly amazing. I think he's going to be the young Heathcliff in an upcoming production of Wuthering Heights. And so he's really quite the find. And then Erin Doherty, who some people might recognize her because she was in The Crown. She was the young Princess Anne in The Crown. She plays a psychotherapist. And that third sequence that she and Owen Cooper, you know, it's just sort of looking at them almost exclusively for the entire hour was one of the most chilling bits of cinema I've ever seen. And so performances across the board, great to my way of thinking. The production, like Dan, as you're saying, I mean, it is one of those things where you're just thrust into the middle of what's happening with this investigation. And we find out pretty early on that it appears as though this 13-year-old kid did kill one of his female classmates. But the whole four-part series, the first one focuses on the police investigation. The second one focuses on the school and what had been happening in the school itself, and that's maybe the more adolescence focus. The third one is just this single take of this psychologist interview with the kid. And then the fourth one, which might be the weakest one of the bunch, sort of focuses on the family, the mom, dad, and the sister.
But weak only in comparison to the others that were so strong.
Right, right. So what did you think about that single take approach, that real time approach? Because I think that worked well for me. I could see how it might not work for others.
Yeah, the idea that the one take thing, gimmick or approach, however you want to describe it, is immersive.
No. You didn't call it a gimmick.
It 100% is a gimmick.
No.
Of course it is. Of course it is. This whole idea, we're going to do the show, but we're going to do it all in one take and we're going to attach it to, of course it's a gimmick, but it's a fun one. I actually don't think it's as immersive as you do. I mean, I love a good long take. Like, some of my favorite movies have long takes, like Goodfellas and Boogie Nights. And actually, Philip Barantini, the director, and Stephen Graham previously collaborated on a movie called Boiling Point, which is set in a restaurant kitchen. And it's entirely done in one take, too. It's like a 90-100-minute take. I think when the whole thing is a big, long, elaborate take, I find myself asking, how did they do that? Or, whoa, how did they get the camera there and the actors there? So I'm thinking more about the technique than I am thinking about the story or the characters. I mean, I cannot deny the craftsmanship of adolescence, though, because ever since I've watched it, I've been Googling, how did they get the camera up into the sky? I don't know if the filmmakers or the TV creators, I don't know if they wanted me to be thinking about that. But this is one of those moments where I wish we still had DVDs with special features on them, because the how we did it special features of the show would be really cool. And some of the things I've seen online have been. So,
well,
yeah,
what about the underlying story here?
Well, see, I think that its examination of internet culture, the toxicity of it, I think it's pretty thin. I think what works for me is the way that it shows the effects on the adults, because they're outside looking in. They're trying to figure out all of this kind of, like, it's almost like another language that these kids have developed on
social
media.
With the emojis
and
so forth.
And I've seen all the plaudits for Adolescence Episode 3. And again, and I also think that going back to the one take approach, I think it makes the performances even more impressive, because they're having to do all of this while all of this complicated choreography is going on around
them. And let's just point out that apparently what they did was they filmed each one of these episodes at least 10 times.
Yeah, yeah.
So they had to go through this whole thing 10 times.
And they had to block it all out.
Exactly.
You know, I read that it was a 3-week process for each episode.
Yep.
The first week is figuring out where the cameras are going to go. Mm-hmm. The second week is sort of walking through it. And then the third week was filming it. And I mean, having to do one take over the course of an hour is a lot. But the fourth episode actually really did work for me. Because of Stephen Graham's performance, and he's trying to go through life as if nothing has happened, because that's just his coping mechanism. And it happens to be his birthday. And everywhere he looks, he's just reminded of the violence that his son has committed. And let's also note that the video evidence they have of the crime happening, only he has seen. His wife and his daughter have not seen it. And so he has seen something that they have not seen. And everywhere he looks, he's reminded of it. The graffiti that's left on his van. The way that people recognize him in public. The way that this other young man takes him aside and says, actually, I don't think your son did anything wrong. And it's just hanging over him. I thought the way that that episode played out, whether or not it needed to be one take is another argument entirely. But it reminded me of like a Ken Loach movie or like a Lynn Ramsey movie, like We Need to Talk About Kevin. It has that kitchen sink drama, but there's this sense of kind of danger and violence, you know, always kind of lurking around the corner.
I think the underlying topic, how much are young men, boys in particular, influenced by this whole like incel movement online
and
so forth.
The susceptibility of them.
Right. Yeah. You know, I just don't know that much about it. So introducing that topic in and of itself, I think is, you know, worth, you know, a jumping off point for discussion. And one of the most eerie things here was the parents, you know, we saw that the dad had his temper, anger management issues, but they seemed to be a pretty typical kind of family. Mm-hmm. And it's not like Let's Talk About Kevin or whatever, where that kid had problems from Jump Street, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it just seemed as though there was no way that these people could have predicted sort of how their lives would play out and so forth.
I think the only problem I had with Adolescence is actually the title itself, because it's, to use a word that MP used when we were talking about this, it's reductive, you know, because it's as much about police procedure and it's as much about the family as it is about this kid. And let's face it, with this particular topic, how many people thrown into any of these kinds of situations end up doing something as dramatic as what this kid does? You know, I think that there's a problem with this kid. It is like what we talked about, Kevin, you know.
Well, and yeah, and you're right that Owen Cooper, I mean, it is one of the best child actor performances I've ever seen.
It's a great performance.
It's pretty amazing, yeah.
I said, this is another Harry Potter kid. Boy, I mean,
Daniel Radcliffe.
Yeah, right. At any rate, that was our discussion of the Netflix limited miniseries Adolescence. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to tackle Steven Soderbergh's theatrical release, Black Bag. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
Subscribe to your favorite public radio programs when you become a Spokane Public Radio sustainer, just like any news or entertainment service you use. But unlike those other services, you decide how much you want to pay. Set up an electronic funds transfer, and monthly installments will be withdrawn automatically from your account. Plus, you can start or stop your subscription anytime you want. As a sustainer, you help make your public radio station strong. You support your favorite programs, and you never have to wonder when to renew. You're part of the community that sustains public radio. Call 509-328-5729 during business hours or go online to SpokanePublicRadio.org. Click the red donate button and start the process. Working together, we make our community a better place to work, play, and listen.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed the Netflix limited miniseries Adolescence. Let's now turn to Black Bag, the latest effort by Steven Soderbergh, and the third time since 2022 that he's teamed up with screenwriter David Koepp. Following Kimmy in 2022 and last year's Presence, Soderbergh and Koepp present us with an even more of what the British novelist Graham Greene would have called an entertainment, it being a blend of espionage, intrigue, and exploration of marital fidelity titled Black Bag. That term itself refers to secrets that can't or at least shouldn't be shared. And it is that dictum, as well as the oft-stated loyalty and love that is understood to be shared by our two principals, the marrieds George, played by Michael Fassbender, and Catherine, played by Cate Blanchett. Both work for a British intelligence agency, as do their friends and colleagues, played by Tom Burke, Maria Abella, Roger Jean Page, and Naomi Harris. Seems someone, likely one of the group, is trying to use a malware that could be used to kill thousands, and George is tasked to find out who. Interestingly enough, wife Catherine is one of the five whom he investigates. Koepp's screenplay keeps us guessing, and Soderbergh, the master that he is, keeps things moving along, smoothing over some plot points that are a little far-fetched. In the end, Black Bag is, as the novelist Green would declaim, entertaining and nigh perfectly cinematic. Think of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, only with the games being played more like Get the Guests rather than anything close to Humiliate the Host.
And there is a direct reference to Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf in the dialogue during one of two key dinner party sequences in this movie, Black Bag. As you're watching it, I mean, just because of the setting, the style, the plot, you're sort of tempted to compare it to some of Soderbergh's other like heist movies or espionage movies like the Ocean's 11 series or Out of Sight. But all the way through Black Bag, I was thinking this is his spiritual sequel to Sex, Lies, and Videotape. Because every conversation in this movie, just like in that movie, is essentially an interrogation, in this case, literally. And the characters, specifically Michael Fassbender, who is basically a human polygraph machine in this movie, he's gleaning all of these personal details so that he can then weaponize them and use them either against those characters or so that the characters can use them against one another without their knowledge. They're bargaining chips, basically. And it just so happens that, unlike in Sex, Lies, and Videotape, all of these people have potentially deadly intelligence secrets at their fingertips. And I agree with you that the plot is, I mean, it's cloak and dagger stuff, right? Like, the MacGuffin here, well, I think there are actually a lot of MacGuffins in the plot of Black Bag, but it's this nuclear weapon secret. Pierce Brosnan is sort of like the top guy here. So, of course, you're thinking of the James Bond movies. There are these secret meetings on park benches. There are, you know, scenes where they're looking at satellite feeds and zooming in and enhancing. So it's got all this kind of like CSI mumbo jumbo. And at a certain point, I just kind of stopped. It's not like I wasn't paying attention to the plot, but I thought, I'm just going to kind of go along with the rhythms of this thing.
I think that's exactly what you have to do.
It's this jazzy kind of movie. And then by the end, I think I was able to piece it together enough that I understood what he was trying to do. Because you're totally right. This is a movie about these people's marriage. It just so happens that they're basically Mr. and Mrs. Smith, you know. And I think this is one of the better movies that Soderbergh has made in, you know, the last decade, I guess. I haven't been too hot on all of his movies, but this one I really enjoyed. I thought it was breezy. It was funny. It does have this sort of action plot and there are things blowing up and stuff like that. But for the most part, this is kind of like a, almost like a drawing room comedy in some ways.
It is.
And I really enjoyed it.
It could almost be a play. I mean, Michael
Fassbender. But it's very cinematic at the same time.
Yeah, exactly.
Right,
yeah.
Right. So Michael Fassbender, I mean, he's like channeling his inner Michael Caine, I think. He has these, you know, heavy black rim glasses and turtlenecks, and he's like sort of the stealthy one, you know.
Everyone's clothes are so
right,
good in this
exactly.
movie.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And they live in this beautiful, amazing, you know, townhouse overlooking most of London and so forth. So I agree. This was fun. I think it was a fun caper. You know, and if you're able to just, you know, you can't put all the pieces together right up front because you're sort of trying to focus on the individual characters and the ensemble cast, which I thought was excellent.
Yeah.
And so you were a huge fan of this movie.
No, absolutely. In fact, I turned to you when it was over and I said, you know, this just might make my top 10 list. It was real early in the year, but it is such a cinematic delight. You know, Soderbergh at his best, nobody makes a film quite like this guy. But I wanted to point out one thing about Fassbender. I really liked him. Remember, this is a guy who was, he played in Assassin's Creed. He played in The Killer. I mean, he is an athlete. He could be the new Errol Flynn. I always thought of him as being the perfect guy to do an Errol Flynn biopic. And yet, there was one scene in which his George is such a controlled, introverted character. He's walking, and he's walking so stiffly. And I went, this guy knows this character, and he is embodying this character from birth to death. I mean, I thought it was such a subtle but very controlled performance by an amazing actor.
And then you have Cate Blanchett, who, you know, is sort of walking through this movie like she's sort of in on a joke that nobody else knows. Like, she has this kind of wry humor about her, even though she's not funny. You just sense doing something humorous at the same time.
Yeah, the sort of essence of who she is.
Yeah.
She's like sort of putting it on, you know, that she's, I mean, as a spy, of course you have to adopt a different persona and so forth.
Yeah.
But she's having more fun doing it than anybody else.
Yes, and this idea that could she be a mole? Could she be one of the rats in the organization? And you start to follow, because basically this is from Michael Fassbender's character's POV. You're watching as he's trying to put together all of these clues. He's going, oh, there's a receipt for a movie or a movie ticket stub in the trash. Maybe I can use this. And so we're sort of watching him figure it out. And then it gets to the point where we think we're ahead of the plot, but we're really not. And so I enjoyed that, too, that the movie's kind of toying with us. I mentioned that Black Bag was cinematic, of course. Soderbergh continues to be his own cinematographer and editor. One of the reasons I would push back on the idea that this could be staged in some way is that I think the style is what makes the movie. It's what gives it its zip. It's what gives it that kind of jazzy feel that I mentioned. Those dinner party scenes are particularly masterfully done because...
And there's one event that you're just like, yeah, whoa.
Yeah, well, and there's also, you know, the movie doesn't really deal with this, but there is sort of a generational divide here as well.
Correct.
That kind of goes uncommented on, but we notice it. But the way that Soderbergh shoots it, he shoots most of the domestic scenes in this really low natural light. So there's kind of this orange glow over everything. And then he films everybody from mirrored angles. So it's almost like there are cameras on both sides of the characters' faces rolling at the same time. And he cuts back and forth. And so it creates this idea that everybody's kind of talking out of both sides of their mouth, literally and figuratively. And so I enjoyed that. So I think the visual style is what pulls the movie along and makes it more than just a kind of, you know, tete-a-tete sort of,
no,
you mentioned
I
Graham Greene, like a Graham Greene espionage.
I mean, if you had a talented stage director, he might be able to somehow make this work on stage. But I think you're right, cinematically, which is, let's face it, Soderbergh's forte. Yeah. I just wanted to point out Maria Abella.
Yeah.
At first, I thought her character was, why did they cast this woman? And then all of a sudden,
yeah, she's good.
She'd go, whoa.
She's got that working class British like attitude. And she played Amy Winehouse in that terrible
right,
Amy
exactly.
Winehouse biopic.
Exactly.
And she's way better in this than she was in that stupid movie.
And I think that, you know, if you're looking for something that's, you know, stylish and smart, and it's also... like I said, tight. I mean, we saw Soderbergh's last movie, Presence, which was also like...
yeah, which came out like a couple months
88
ago.
88 minutes or something. And so I like the fact that not everything
has to be
three
hours
of,
long
yeah,
with
exactly.
an interval.
Well,
yeah.
And I don't want to oversell Black Bag too
much. No.
The pleasures of this movie are in its control. There are so many millions of ways that this could have become just another... we've seen this a million
yes.
times before. And in some ways you have. But it's the control that Soderbergh has in this. He doesn't always have that control, but he does here. I'll also say that I would recommend seeing Black Bag on the big screen like we did, but it is available for, you know, on demand. You can rent it or buy it digitally, however you want to see it. I don't think that the power would be diminished if you watch it at home, but it's just, it's a fun genre exercise that's just, it's more elegant and more clever than you think it's going to be.
Well, and the thing is, movies are moving from the big screen to the small screen with rapidity
that we
hadn't really predicted. So just wait a couple weeks and I still want to go to the theater.
Me too.
Just
Me
saying.
Too.
At any rate, that was our discussion of Black Bag, and this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbender, Murray Pat Truthart, and I discussed the Netflix limited miniseries Adolescence. Let's take this moment to thank Cassie Fox for both producing and engineering the show. We thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, and we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer, wherever we can find it. Till then, consider these words from the actor Tom Hanks. Everybody has something that chews them up, and for me, that thing was always loneliness. The cinema has the power to make you not feel lonely, even when you are. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.